Boss can get away with one name still. Damn it. Is it like Madonna?
Yeah.
Foz?
The Foz.
Exactly.
He's going to sing Purple Rain for us or something next.
That would be Prince.
I know. I'm just saying.
Still one name. Still
Foz
one name
is like
mind.
Prince,
you
know? Yeah.
I don't know about that. I am sans pants in honor of Lufthansa First Class.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. Yeah, so let's just start this episode with some lessons learned. Foz, you had this great idea that we could have some kind of...
Useful information
at the beginning of the show. So
let's not go too crazy.
So what did you learn, Foz?
Well, last week I had the opportunity to go see a sneak preview of the new Eero Saarinen documentary that PBS is releasing in January.
Oh, sweet.
And the one really, I mean, aside from it being really interesting, because for those that don't know, he was the gentleman behind the TWA terminal at JFK and the Dulles Terminal building. But what I didn't know was that he died before both of them were complete.
Wow. So he never got to see them completed and finished and beautiful.
Right.
Wow.
So his legacy was much stronger, and he had a lot of opposition when those things were being built, and when his career only lasted about 10 years. And as he was building those, he had a lot of opposition, and really his fame didn't come till well after his death.
I mean,
like
Dulles,
so many artists.
I mean, Dulles was pretty much, like, people hated it, right? Like, the idea of Dulles being built, and they still hate it, but it is a beautiful terminal.
I was going to say, has that changed?
They hate it for different reasons now. People who hate Dulles hate it either for transportation to and from Washington, D.C., which is fully justifiable, or the quote-unquote temporary United terminal, which is also fully justifiable. But I got to say, every time I fly in and out of there, you know, as an O&D passenger, and get to walk out front and see the main building that he designed, I love it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Like, the way you pull up to it from the front, and then the roadway sweeps around to the side, so you get the profile shot of it. I love it as a building.
It's a gorgeous building, but he was also responsible for the whole concept of the remote, the mobile lounge. The moon buggies, exactly. That was his doing.
Yeah, okay, so, you know, less a fan, but...
You can't love all their work.
Yeah. Every artist has a dud.
Yeah, you gotta have one piece that you just hate. And what about you, Seth?
I found out earlier this week that, I believe it's the National Archives, I have to go back and I'll put in the show notes a link to what it is, but there were scans, high-res scans made of some of the Wright brothers' original photos, and they're stunning. Like, just amazing that they exist at all, much less, you know, seeing some of the early flight stuff happening. So really, really cool archive available that in retrospect, I probably should have shared with you guys earlier anyways, just because it's that cool.
Yeah. But, and that's at the that's the National Archives or the National Gallery?
They're online.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Definitely put a link in. That's awesome.
Yes. That is the vaguely useful information that I've learned this week or since our last show.
Very nice. I did not learn anything. I have been lazy and mostly watching Dexter. So
you've learned how to kill people and hide it?
No, I would say I've learned how to be a couch potato. So, yeah, but I think that's great. I think maybe we'll keep this up, and since it's every 2 weeks, I'm sure we can. I mean, I'm sure we all stumble on something on the internet. So, the dot today, Mexico City. The DOT finally kind of came to an agreement about the Delta Aeromexico slot restrictions for their joint venture, right? It's a joint venture.
Yes. Yep.
What's the details, Foz?
Well, they came back with some restrictions in that they still have to seed 24 slots of Mexico City pairs in Mexico City and 6 at JFK, and both airlines have said that's too many. That's not financially viable for them to do. So we'll see what they do now.
Yeah. So they're gonna protest it.
As they normally do.
So I'm just trying to figure out now, and I may have to clickety-clack type away here while we're going through this. I thought there was a decision made, they protested it, and then the DOT came back with revised numbers.
And those 24 and 6 was the revised numbers.
24 and 6 is the revised?
Yep.
Jesus. Okay.
I mean, how much more leniency do they want? They want everything, basically.
Well, they don't want to cede anything.
No, the Mexican government was going to be like 4 slots or something like that. It was going to be a very small number.
Yeah. Do you think this is productive to keep going back and forth like this? Or do you think that Delta and Aeromexico should just say, you know what, we've come out better than we were. Let's start up our flights and start.
Well, I mean, the worst that happens is they lose the appeal and they stay where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I remember of it. Yeah. Reduces divestiture to, yeah. They reduced it to JFK only being 4, a week ago.
Oh, so I read the wrong thing then.
That's okay. I saw a tweet at one point, so I had to find it. So they also, my understanding is they gave a you have 1 week sort of yes or no, but stop screwing around kind of deadline on the decision. So,
oh,
and that was 6 days ago.
So what happens tomorrow?
We shall see.
So the 6 days or 7 days, you know, a week to decide or whatever, and that's saying basically accept or if this doesn't happen?
Or you don't have a joint venture, yeah. And I know that the two airlines were disappointed that it was more, significantly more slots divested than what the Mexican authorities required.
Interesting.
So that was part of the protest. But
I mean, what is Mexico? I mean, they lose nothing in that case, right? By ceding fewer slots in Mexico, it's a boon for them. It's not like they're waiting. The thing I have a question on, which is a little random, is where did the slots from Mexicana go?
In New York? Or the ones in Mexico?
Or no, Mexico City.
In Mexico.
Mexico City is like terribly congested, arguably more than JFK in some ways.
They finally took their website down saying we're not dead yet.
No, he's dead, Jim. Yeah, so that's an interesting question.
I wonder if they if they finally took down the shantytown in the airport terminal. Seriously, there was like a whole crazy little town of former employees protesting built up in the terminal.
Oh God, that's funny.
Jeez.
It was crazy. I know, like I saw it a couple years ago when we went for a bachelor party that I think actually you guys both skipped. And then I saw it again this past May. So yeah, it's been there. And I think it's been there since they shut down.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, somewhat justifiably, that was a disaster where some finance guys came in, gutted the thing, liquidated it, and took all the money and went home. You know, they looted that company from the inside out. It was very unfortunate. But anywho, what happens now? I don't know. They either are going to approve it or not. It's also worth somewhat laughing at the fact that Delta lost in the LA Beijing competition with American. So that's a couple consecutive negative results from the DOT for Delta.
But they still got an ADA. Yeah.
But they got an ADA, that's right. So they bragged about that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a complete loss. I mean, overall, the DOT has been very friendly to them. They got to keep the slots at JFK they leased from United. They got an ADA. I mean, Delta's just becoming the case of I want my cake and eat it too, and it's just becoming the spoiled child at the party who throws a tantrum for lack of a better term.
Well, hang on.
Can we get one more metaphor? I feel like we need one more.
Let's put the cherry on top. Bastion said that they will, by the end of, what was it, Seth, 2017, most of their operations in Tokyo will be out of Haneda.
He said 2020. It was entirely
2020.
Olympics.
Sorry, 2020.
He expects further liberalization, and he expects to be able to move more and more flights over to Haneda. I think, you know, at one point, Delta was opposed to Haneda expansion because it knew it would never get enough slots. And now that ship sailed, it's sort of changing its course and saying, fine, open the whole thing up completely. We want, you know, everybody to have as many slots as possible so we can move our stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they also, on this last investor call last week, were talking about making nice with Korean and shifting their regional hub to Seoul for the onward connecting flow. So expect a joint venture, I think, well before this time next year, expect a joint venture to be announced.
Scott Kirby leaves and things just go weird. Oh, man.
Scott Kirby was AA, right?
Kirby was AA.
Yeah, sorry, Scott. What was that? I was talking about
Richard Anderson.
Anderson. No wonder you guys went silent.
Yeah. Like, wait a minute, wrong airline.
Do I have to edit that out?
No, you can totally leave my faux pas in there. It's cool.
Anderson's gone. But the good news is they continue to keep up the illegal subsidies drumbeat. So Anderson's legacy isn't completely dead.
But they gave me $1,000 this weekend.
Well, that was very generous of them.
You got to explain this, Foz. You got to tell the story now.
Okay. So the one thing, you know, I'll preface this because we can also talk about my lovely landing a week and a half ago. What I've come to realize is in order to get a job in airline operations, the one part of your brain that can't work is strategy and logic, basic logic. So Delta puts up a weather waiver. I'm flying from Salt Lake City, from San Jose to JFK via Salt Lake City. They put up a weather waiver. I call them up. I'm like, can I get rebooked on the nonstop from San Francisco to JFK? They go, no, it's a change in airport, so we can't do that. Okay, fine. They're like, you can look on the website. You can go through LA if that's available, but you can't change the airports. Fine. So sure enough, I go look on the website the next day. San Jose, LA, JFK is available. It rebooks me. So I have a $308 G class first class ticket. it rebooks me into full F and J.
Very nice.
Right. So, you know, that's a nice function of the irregular operations. They don't limit it on inventory buckets. So, you know, that's good for consumers.
Right, but you would think they would at least reclass it to the original class. You know, let you consume from the higher class, but put you in the reservation in the original class for all the other purposes. But whatever. So I'm sitting on board in San Jose, and this is after I have just flown from Heathrow to get on to fly to LA. And they come on looking for a volunteer. The guy behind me raises his hand, and they're offering $1,000. And the woman's like, "Are you going to JFK?" And he goes, "No, I'm only going to LA." And I go, "I'm going to JFK." She's like, "You want $1,000?" I'm like, "Sure." She's like, "We'll put you on the nonstop." I'm like, "Even better."
So the guy behind you now hates you.
The guy behind me hates me, and Delta then puts me in a car and drives me to San Francisco. So they could have just done what I wanted a day sooner and saved $1,000, but they didn't, so it worked out for me.
So were they oversold on both San Jose City, LA, and LA JFK?
Nope. Just the San Jose LA.
So why did she have JFK on her mind then? That's so weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
I don't know. Unless they were trying to get someone to go to JFK because they had a nonstop option because there's no more flights to LA that night. Because San Jose, they only fly to Atlanta, Salt Lake City, and LA, and everything else had already left.
So not having to put them up overnight, arguably giving you $1,000 of funny money, although it's not necessarily funny money because you need the Amex gift certificate. Did you do Amex gift certificates or Delta Cash?
Well, they didn't offer me the Amex gift certificate.
Am I the only one that's ever had this?
I guess so.
Yeah, I haven't gotten it.
When I volunteered on a flight to Seattle a couple of months back, I was basically on the form that you're filling out, it's like you can take it in a variety of different ways. Like you sort of like a DIY, choose your own adventure, what do you want for your comp? And one of the options was Amex gift cards instead of Delta dollars.
I didn't even get a form to fill out.
Okay, well.
What'd she do, just hand you $1,000 cash?
I wish. No, she. Well, it's funny. She gives me the stack of paper, and I'm looking at it. Where is the voucher? And the voucher's right on front, but it looks like just – it says this is a receipt, but there's a voucher number on there, and there's a value all the way at the bottom. And then there's like 20 pages of terms and conditions.
Read through that. Maybe somewhere in there it tells you you could have taken Delta dollar or taken an Amex gift card.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway.
And that's a nice little you got a nice little deal. I mean, that's the biggest issue I run into with like United on those types of things is because they won't switch you over, not even change of airports, but because it goes to PS, they're like, no, can't do that, sorry. And
it's like it goes from A to J or whatever.
Yeah, or it's like to C usually, and they're like, no, sorry, can't do that. You can go through Denver, or you know, they'll find somewhere else for me to go, and which sucks, but sounds like it worked out for you, Foz.
Yeah,
nice.
Hey, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. The line for today, Seth, I'll let you introduce it. I thought you had the better info than me.
Sure. Frankfurt to Abu Dhabi. Turns out that pigs do fly, hell will freeze over, and whatever other metaphor you wish to bring up for things that will never happen can in fact happen. Lufthansa and Etihad are going to offer code shares.
Whoa.
And it's absolutely bizarre. And I think there's been... You know, the European operations for Etihad, which essentially is Air Berlin, some Alitalia, they've got their Etihad Regional, which is that Swiss, I think it used to be Darwin maybe, that regional operation. All these essentially failing airlines that Etihad's come in and invested in and lost something like $1 billion doing. At least I think it may even just be $1 billion in Air Berlin alone. And we talked about this a little bit, I think, recently, is the Air Berlin situation is pretty much falling apart as much as it can. They had to divest a whole bunch of airplanes back to Lufthansa. They're spinning off Niki, and they got Etihad to invest an obscene amount of money in the Niki spinoff and sort of back that company. And Air Berlin took that cash as like a payout. So Air Berlin's, you know, bleeding Etihad dry, as it were. And now Lufthansa is taking over a bunch of the short haul aircraft. They're going to roll them basically point to point flying into the Eurowings operation instead of Air Berlin's operation. And the latest news is that not only are there going to be code shares between Frankfurt Munich down to Abu Dhabi, and I think Etihad's putting its code on some flights past Frankfurt, maybe. So there's some, it's not a huge code share, but it covers a few cities. The even crazier is now there's discussion and there's some sort of inside sources, and I don't know how reliable any of this is, but you know, it was on the internet, so it might be true, that Etihad is ready to help push Air Berlin into Lufthansa, that Lufthansa will sort of take over Air Berlin in total, not just the short haul operations. And even more crazy, perhaps, is that Etihad CEO James Hogan may be on his way out the door.
Because of that news, you think?
I can't help but think that admitting that you blew $1 billion of the Amiri's money trying to make European airlines work looks good on a resume, right?
Yeah, no, it's totally understandable.
There's
a lot to digest there.
There's a whole bunch of moving parts, and I'm even having trouble keeping up with like what's happening. It's literally changing day by day. it's nuts. Even just the code share was crazy. And then these other little things, it was the code share was announced one day, and that's actually public and for reals. And then there's a takeover in play, came a little after that. And then maybe there's Hogan out came just this evening. So that's Tuesday night on the 20th, so a couple days before the episode goes live. But
I mean,
yeah.
The code sharing past Frankfurt and Munich kind of makes a little bit of sense because of the limitations placed on MEAs, Middle East Airlines. Like, there's a lot of limitations in Germany. And we could talk about the specifics, but like Emirates only has 2 or 3 flights into Germany, and that's what they're legally allowed. I think Etihad's only 2 flights.
Yeah, they don't have full open skies on that bilateral. It's a very limited bilateral.
Yeah, and so I think that makes sense because there's a strong demand in places like Cologne and Dusseldorf and even Berlin for Middle East traffic because of ties to the Middle East and, you know, people living there, people working there, and coming back to Germany. So I could totally see that as being like Lufthansa saying, okay, well, you can put your code on our Frankfurt Dusseldorf flight. It's no big deal.
I mean, and in theory, right, that was why the Air Berlin partnership made sense. It was the same idea. They would feed Air Berlin and then push those passengers onward on the short haul hops. So, you know, same, just, you know, this doubles it up. But I don't know. It's.
Well, I mean, you think about the past. I mean, Dusseldorf was a huge hub for Air Berlin. So if that's, if Lufthansa's taking that over, I can't see Lufthansa keeping Dusseldorf as, you know, a massive. I mean, I'm sure they'll do point-to-point service, but they're not going to have. I can't see them doing nonstop service to the U.S. from Dusseldorf like Air Berlin has. I don't know.
They have Newark.
Yeah, true. I guess they could. I mean, does Lufthansa want to be the leisure low-cost carrier? Their Eurowings business sure matches that model.
I think the answer to that is yes with some of the new destinations like Tampa, San Jose.
True.
These aren't really business markets.
True.
Yeah, they want to do both.
Yeah, and I think the reality is, I think Seth made the comment of what Emirates is. It's a low-cost carrier in the back and a premium carrier up front. I think that's really where most of the airlines are going at this point.
Yeah, but Lufthansa is doing it by spinning off a new carrier.
Yeah.
So with and this is all on top of the Brussels Airlines news too, right?
But that might be more related to the union aspect of it.
Oh. Yes, some of it is union related, definitely. I mean, I guess one of the challenges I see with this whole approach, and one of the biggest things that Europe has sort of struggled with the airlines and trying to sort of be low-cost carrier and also legacy sort of premium service, they're going down the same path that U.S. carriers did 20 years ago, where we had Ted and Song. Right? They're trying to run an airline within an airline instead of doing what the U.S. carriers are doing now, which is you run multiple airlines on the same plane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I think it was in the investor call again from Delta last week where Ed Bastian, the new CEO, basically said, we're not stupid enough to go down that path again. We tried that before it failed, but we figured out how we can sell different blocks of seats to different types of customers using better revenue management. It's basically the marketing effect of basic economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the difference is when the US carriers did it, they did it with the same staffing. So they didn't realize the savings from a staffing perspective, which really is one of their most expensive burdens.
Yeah.
True.
Right.
It definitely was at the time because fuel and planes were still cheap. Now it's a little different, but not enough.
Now, since we're talking about US low-cost carriers, did you guys ever watch the show The Loop?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We talked about this on the show before actually. It's a great show.
God, that I'm thinking about the scene where they're talking about the low-cost carriers, and they name theirs Jack.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I wish I could find that show online.
I have season one. They never released season two, but they did release season one, and the reason they didn't release season two was due to the music rights to one particular song, so they can't release it.
It was a great show. You got to look it up, Seth. You got to find it somewhere.
All right. Well, I will talk to Foz. Apparently, he has a copy.
I have to find the DVD, but I do own it.
If you can find it, I'll trade you a teddy bear for it.
Yes.
Something else about this is, the Brussels airline, I touched on it a minute ago. Lufthansa is basically taking over. They're buying the remaining stake in Brussels Airlines.
For pennies. Was it like $3 million or $5 million? It was a very small number.
$3.5 million.
I mean, it's like the deal of the century. It's like, I feel like they robbed them. You know,
wasn't the BMI purchase at a similar price point, but also included a bunch of debt?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, but what's BMI? I mean, they were kind of failing. Brussels has been somewhat stable.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think, and they're talking about folding it into the Eurowings brand again. I mean, Eurowings is really going to quickly become a Ryanair, it looks like, of Lufthansa. It just,
well, yeah, I mean, that was sort of the point, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just weird how they're like, going about it. It seems, it's like, hey, let's just buy some airlines and turn it into a low-cost carrier. What do you say? That sounds good. We got this one for $3.5 million. That sounds like a deal. It's just, it's the most random way to do it that I could imagine. I mean, they were buying planes for German wings, right? And then it turned it into Eurowings. And they were talking about all these long-haul destinations. And now it's like, well, we have this carrier that's basically taken over domestic flying in Europe. Except for Frankfurt and Munich, because those are our star routes. Yeah.
Because those are places where we still have a stranglehold and can extort money out of passengers, except, oh, wait, hello, Ryanair building a base in Frankfurt.
it's just weird, man. Yeah. Well, I'll have to see what happens with it. I think it's going to be a few years before we really see the full effect of all of it. But and if this news about Etihad CEO being out is true, that really changes that whole Middle East carrier game, right?
Yeah. There's a 45 million euro loan also in play.
With Brussels?
Yeah.
Interesting.
From what I'm seeing. So it's not truly the cheapest airline buyout ever, but it's still pretty cheap. And it actually profited in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were doing well.
Except that whole attack shut down the airport.
Yeah, and they've lost a lot of airlines there, I mean, with carriers cutting back service. So
yeah, although that should help Brussels Airlines. It reduces competition. It's just a matter of how much traffic there will be.
Well, and it's also, they have that, you know, we've talked about this before, but Brussels has that the connections to Africa, tons of flights to Africa. And so I know that's a huge draw for them as a carrier onward into other parts of Europe and from Brussels itself, O&D traffic. So yeah, it'll be fun to watch this all play out. But see, as the destination, we have Seattle for a number of reasons. But I think the biggest one is the Delta-Alaska breakup.
They're finally getting divorced.
They're getting divorced.
It's like the parents you watched for years fighting. They finally did it.
and because of the Alaska Virgin America merger being complete, like being official, I guess.
Closed is the word you're looking for.
Closed. Thank you, Seth.
The transaction has closed.
My podcast, Thesaurus, Seth. So yeah, two big things. I think everyone knew the Delta thing was coming, right? And just didn't know when. And so May 1st, 2017. Yeah. The partnership
relationship is no more.
Yeah, it is over. No earnings, no burning.
But if you read the fine print, it appears that if you bought a ticket before December 19th, before the announcement date, for travel on that, Alaska will at least give you credit for it.
Yeah, Alaska, that's the one sort of asymmetrical part of the breakup. Alaska will give you credit based on already purchased tickets on Delta. I have to assume there's not many, so it's not a big, you know, giveaway from them. Right? You're talking about people that bought tickets 4.5 months in advance, which the average number is like half of that. So
yeah,
it's not a ton of seats necessarily, but very generous move on Alaska's part. Upstanding, you know. It was also very funny to read the statements that they put out. One of their, I think the guy from Mileage Plan, or no, Alliances, the Alliances guy who they quoted in their sort of blog post about it was like, well, we've all known this was coming, and here it is. even in their PR, he just said it. It was great. Yeah, it's going to be, it's a nice breakup. I mean, we've all been expecting it, even when the DOT approved the Alaska Virgin deal, it ignored that relationship existed in terms of what sort of code shares had to be killed because they knew it was ending.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, so, it's
everybody's going to happen.
I think one thing I noticed was the KLM Air France, I mean, that partnership's separate, but because their ties are so close to Delta, I'm wondering what the future of that relationship looks like.
They have said that all of those partnerships will remain. Well, obviously, everything can change. But not only are they staying, Alaska upped earnings rates on a bunch of their international partners for business and first class.
Yeah, for RDMs, for redeemable miles. Yep.
Well, apparently that's EQMs too.
No.
At Alaska, generally, the rates match for RDMs and EQMs for partners.
There's base points and there's bonus points. Is it everything counts. I don't even know. I don't
deal historically with that. They have.
Sweet.
I'm gonna look online. I'm looking right now. I'm gonna be the producer here.
They are producer. Yeah, I laughed because they did the numbers and it's like up to 80% more, and then they showed examples, one of which was 120%. So that's some funny math right there. But yeah, the new earn rates are actually very nice. I think that the sort of symmetrical earn reciprocity that they've put in place for Alaska and Virgin together is really good. There's an interesting, if you don't have elite status, there's a lot of situations where switching your Virgin flights to earn against Alaska's mileage plan will net you more points, even with the 1.3x multiplier as, you know, when the time comes in January to convert from Elevate to mileage plan, you get a 1.3x multiplier. So
it is, it's an additional bonus. So their language is the base miles and the class of service bonuses count towards the elite status, but the additional bonus does not. It's an additional status of RDM.
So they called it out separately.
Yeah, it's like a separate column in the earnings.
Yeah, interesting. But now I think, you know, we know a lot about how this program is going to evolve, and they're doing it quick. They want people to start in January moving points over so they can shut down Elevate.
Yeah. Well, and so one thing, you know, and I noticed, you know, we're talking about these bonuses. I noticed that KLM and Air France weren't part of airlines that got the additional bonus for earnings, which is interesting.
Yeah. So maybe they're not all that close.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think you're right. They want everybody off Elevate and they want everybody using mileage plan. And
yeah. No, I mean, like the reciprocity of moving points back and forth is really only moving points forth. You can only move from Virgin to mileage plan. You can't move them back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to shut it down quick. My curiosity there is, what does that mean for partners?
True.
There's a few that overlap, but there's a bunch that don't.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that'll get interesting quick.
But, you know, it's going to, yeah, shuts down. They're shutting down Elevate. It's coming.
Yep.
So.
One other thing I was going to say, hang on, let me pull up my notes here.
Denver?
Well, no, I was going to talk. I want to talk a little bit more about the earnings, the Delta Alaska earnings thing. I thought, you know, some of this, the abilities of, you know, mileage. Everybody talks about mileage plan being a great program to put your miles in. And I was just looking at some of the values. I mean, for people who were, I was playing with it, Hainan Airlines. Like, you can find flights to Asia for relatively affordable. An affordable subset of miles in a premium cabin. I think it's like 60,000 to Asia. But the catch is they charge a
$250.
A fuel surcharge on them. So like it's like $500 bucks to go to China. And JAL
round trip.
Yeah, and JAL isn't.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at one ways and it was like $250.
Yeah. Which I found interesting that JAL doesn't charge. I mean, but I guess JAL doesn't charge.
Japan can't. Japan fuel surcharges are tied to actual fuel prices by law.
Oh, okay.
It's like Brazil, but even, you know, slightly less restrictive than Brazil, but. Okay.
That explains.
Which can't do any. Now the other thing, yes, it is interesting. I was looking at that coming home from Shanghai a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it at various times. I don't remember if it was on the show or not, but I was strongly considering the Hainan flight. Actually, it was going to be, it turns out I was there for the day of the inaugural to Beijing, Vegas, but I was in my conference still, so I couldn't take it. Oh. I just missed an inaugural. And I only found out after I got to China. Oops. But I ended up, and I was going to take it to Boston and sort of schlep down from there, but chose not to.
Yeah.
Flew nonstop home. But we also, one of the things we meant to talk about was the new reward charts for Alaska.
That's right.
Mileage plan.
Good call.
They switched to the sort of distance-based. They always had intrastate short hauls. So basically within Seattle, within Washington, within Alaska, within California, you could do cheap awards. They cut the price on those. So now and they took away the state border restriction. So anything under 700 miles is now a 5,000 point one-way reward. Starting price.
Nice. It's a nice deal.
Yeah, but that starting price.
If you can find it, right.
Right. I mean, Steven, I think we were chatting online about this the other day when I was writing about this. I found them on Spokane to Seattle. Mm-hmm. I found 5,000 point awards. On those same days, I found 7,500 and 15,000, I think, also. And the 15,000-ish was clearly, you know, the W bucket, that award bucket was zeroed out. So it was sort of obvious when that happened, but there was no rhyme or reason between the 5,000 and the 7,000 that I could document. And then I started looking at Seattle to Portland, which is under the 700-mile limit.
Yep.
The state border thing doesn't matter anymore. All I could find was 10,000, 20,000, and then 30,000 for the sort of rule buster awards. In theory, it should have been a 5,000 one-way starting price, but it was nowhere close. And I scrolled through a few months' worth.
I mean, I think that's based on demand. I would totally – I mean, those flights are constantly packed.
Sure.
It's like a commuter. I mean, it's like flying, you know – LaGuardia DC.
It's the DC. It's the LaGuardia shuttle. I get it. I understand why they want to charge more, because they can and people will still pay it.
Yeah.
But to me, it's also the starting at versus that's, you know, people are like, oh, they cut the price on their award chart. Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
And 10,000 is still cheaper than the 12.5 that it was on the old charts. So, like, good. I like that. But I think there's a little bit of cheering for variable price awards where historically people have been very anti that.
Yeah. I mean, if you can find the cheaper award, yay, good for you.
I didn't see a single day with the 5,000 on that route. That's the thing to me. It's like, and obviously, right, award inventory changes, yada, yada, yada. I get all those things, but it's interesting to try to figure out what all the different price points are for the different types of awards. I don't think it's as simple as find W inventory, get yourself a nice award.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all. And it's going to be interesting to see from a, you know, sort of expert flyer alerts or whatever else you want to set, how do you find award space at the cheap levels, short of going back to the Alaska website a lot?
Yep, I agree.
And people hate Sky Miles for that. People seem to love Mileage Plan for that. And you know, the logic in my brain is crashing hard based on that.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Don't try to make sense.
Don't try to make sense out of airlines.
Yeah, well, logic and airlines do not mix together. That's what I've learned.
I understand.
Like a 30-minute turnaround after an emergency landing.
Okay.
Oh, man. You should tell that story too, Foz. Maybe at the end of the show.
A couple weeks.
I think the last thing we want to talk about, two things actually. I want to talk about the Frontier breakdown in Denver. Basically, I mean, it's a meltdown. United had some issues. There was a bunch of cancellations. There were about 400 cancellations just recently because of weather. And just the pictures of the baggage claim area at Denver from Frontier's bags. I mean, planes were coming in. And they were just dumping the bags. They didn't have anywhere to put them. There was no more carousel space. They were just throwing them on the floor. And the floors are littered with bags. And people are just searching through. I mean, how do you find your bag? And some people's bags never showed up. So they were told to come back 2 days later and look for their bags. I mean, it was just an wow. Absolute mess. And I think someone posted, like, on-time rates for this month or this last weekend. And Frontier
cranky.
Was like, yeah, Cranky Flyer did.
That on Twitter.
And
yeah.
I think Frontier was, like, at the very bottom of the list. And well,
17% or something like that?
Yeah, just terrible.
Even the best was only, like, 57% for the weekend. I mean, there was snow on the East Coast and in Denver.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, and Chicago had snow. It was a bad weekend for everybody. But, yeah, like, I think Frontier was something like 17%.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was bad on the... In Europe, too. Amsterdam was, when I got there last week, it was fogged in. London was fogged in 2 days later. Like, BA had 6-hour rolling delays.
Wow.
It was a disaster.
The pictures, we have a link to Mashable that has a bunch of photos from people on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. And you're just, it's just a sea of bags. Like, there's no way you're ever going to find your bag. Like, you just wait for other people to find theirs. And eventually, I'd go back like a week later. It's probably in the lost and found. Last name, Seagraves.
Yeah. unless there's something very important, I would just go file a lost bag claim at that point and let them find it.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Well, the risk there is that they say, screw it, and just send it off to Alabama. But,
that's true.
Well, then they can pay for it.
Yeah, that's fair. One of the things I found interesting about someone I know was writing a story about it and apparently called Frontier Corpcom to ask what was going on, and the response I got was, what, it's a slow news day for you? This is what you have to follow up on?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, trying to play it off as it was no big deal.
Wow. I mean, people were waiting in line for 2 hours just to talk to someone to try and get on some of the flight. And I had read people on Twitter, and I haven't verified any of this, so I'm not going to state it was fact. But some people were saying, yeah, they canceled the flight, and they said the next time they could get me out was Christmas Day. And this is 2 days ago.
That's a week.
A week.
Well, they don't run a daily schedule everywhere, right?
That's true. They don't. But, I mean...
Still stupid.
That's nuts. And then lastly, Foz, Polaris Lounge. You got to pay it a visit. What did you think?
It's a very nice lounge. I actually really liked it. They've really done a nice job with it. The thing that really surprised me was its size. Middle of winter, and well, we're not technically in winter, so late autumn, midweek, I had a hard time finding a seat.
Wow.
And so I can only imagine what's going to happen in the summer when most of those 76s are upgauged to 777s and Rome gets added in, you know, the additional Frankfurt flight gets added in, Dublin comes in, and possibly Shannon. And what happens to that lounge?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I don't know what they're going to do about it because I don't think they're adding any more lounge space for Polaris.
Which lounge did it replace?
The Global First Lounge.
So that's the one when you're walking in, is that B?
No, when you walk into C and come off the escalators, it was the one behind the customer service counter.
Oh, okay, so like straight back coming off the escalators, a little bit to the right or to the left.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. So there's not a ton of space.
No. I mean, there's space, but it was 90% full when I walked in.
And did they didn't have any of the food options or anything up yet, did they?
They actually had some of them. They were just light hors d'oeuvres. But they definitely had they had more space for more food, but it just wasn't there.
Yeah, because they're going to do a menu. I mean, that was kind of the plan, right? They're going to do a full sit-down menu type service.
Eventually. No, I mean, the other point is most of the people who are sitting at tables were traveling alone, so they were just single people sitting at tables. In the summer, you'll get more people paired up, or larger groups, but it was still a little surprising that seating was so scarce.
Yeah. That's disappointing. It's really disappointing.
It is.
Oh, man. Did you check out the shower rooms or anything?
I did not check out the shower rooms. I did check out the bathrooms, and they might be nicer than Minneapolis. but they've done the London concept where there's no common bathroom. Each one is a bathroom suite.
Oh, okay. What do you think about that? I mean, that's a little odd, right?
It's nice. It's a little more private. It's much easier when you want to go change clothing in.
Yeah, that's true.
Rather than trying to fiddle yourself in a stall and hitting the wall as you're doing it. So they're spacious. I mean, they were nice.
Oh, good.
I mean, the space was gorgeous. The food they had, the things they had were great. The only thing of concern would be the size.
Well, I appreciate your report. I mean, they're opening these. I mean, they're saying they're going to open the San Francisco one. I think the San Francisco one they're going to start on soon. They haven't even started it. And then the Newark one, they've started, right? Or they're going to start?
Newark's under construction, I think, already.
Yeah, Newark's been under construction for a while. But, I mean, the concerning part of that is if it's really just the space they're under construction, that's going to be probably nowhere near enough for what they need in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big problem. I mean, just because of all their departures are so close together. I mean, and you see that in the United clubs, too, when that was the main place for people to go.
From 5:15 to 7:30 is like when 90% of the European departures happened at Newark.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun to like watch the flood of people out as they like realize their flight's about to board or their flight's going to be ending boarding soon. It's people are just funneling out. Well, we'll have to see how it plays out. I don't think it'll be a good thing. I mean, probably the best place to go for a Polaris lounge will be Houston, where you've got Houston, Frankfurt, and Munich when it's back for the season, all leaving around the same time. And the South American flights don't leave till late at night.
Yeah. And if you're on the Tokyo flight, it's in the early morning, or not early, but like starts at 11 a.m.
Yeah, it's like 11 a.m. I mean, that'll probably be the best airport to go to for Polaris.
Yeah, but it only goes to 8 places.
True.
Win some, lose some.
Yeah.
I mean, but I imagine Newark during the day won't be so bad because between the Hong Kong, the China flights, and Tokyo, they're all spaced apart from a time perspective. They're not within 15 minutes of each other anymore.
Oh, yeah, really? It's like 11. It's basically from 11 to 3. There's, I think, right, Narita's about like 11, 11:30. The two China flights are around 1, and Hong Kong's around 3, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize Hong Kong left that late.
It always has. The China flights, they move. They used to go earlier.
Mm, makes sense. Sweet. Well, guys, thanks for being on the show. Our listeners can follow us at moredotsmorelines.com or on Twitter at dotslines. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Peace out.